Listen to the voices of our world.
I've been lied to by my own government.
We're opening up a new nuclear proliferation era.
I'm very angry at the Army.
There should be no commercial use of plutonium.
Because they failed to tell the truth about this depleted uranium.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Howard Schwartz, sitting in for Eileen Bott. Imagine stepping on a piece of gum, and every time you try to get it off your shoe, it would grow and become more sticky. Now you have gum on your hands, gum on your brow, because you brushed your forehead in exasperation, and there's gum in your hair. Ice doesn't help. Your phone is completely enveloped in a pink mess, so you can't even dial a friend. The gum simply won't come off. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. Well, radioactive materials like uranium and plutonium are kind of like that sticky, growing piece of gum. The more we delay addressing the dangers of dealing with these elements, the bigger the problem becomes. As the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is debated at the United Nations, we'll speak about the effects of depleted uranium weapons on our own soldiers and about Japan's movement towards making plutonium available for commercial purposes. It was a beautiful summer's day, 8:15 in the morning, and the Enola Gay B-29 bomber dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, Japan. Over 140,000 people died, and the city was incinerated. A second atomic bomb destroyed Nagasaki. To this day, thousands of people in Japan die each year from radiation illnesses caused by the explosions. 60 years have passed since we unleashed this annihilating force, and relatively little has been done to prevent it from happening again. As countries gathered to review the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty at the United Nations, over 1,000 Japanese citizens have come to call for the abolition of nuclear weapons. Some of them, survivors who remember what happened. And Americans, what do we remember besides that impressive mushroom cloud? Since developing the atom bomb, testing it, and using it, we've participated in a nuclear arms race. We've amassed an arsenal of nuclear weapons that could destroy the world many times over. We continue to mine uranium and form plutonium by justifying our energy needs. We have built over 100 nuclear power plants without having a clear plan for storing nuclear waste. And we've invented armor-piercing ammunition made from depleted uranium, which we've used during the Gulf War and today's war in Iraq. When we use weapons containing depleted uranium against our enemies, we contaminate the environment for decades and harm our own soldiers, too. Our first guest is a veteran of the Iraq War. Herbert R. Reed spent almost 20 years doing military service. After about 6 weeks in Iraq, Reed suffered injuries and was medevaced out. Surgery for his back and shoulders and large doses of pain medication did not alleviate his memory lapses, rashes, and other chronic symptoms. Eleanor Ostrinsky speaks to veteran Reed about his deployment to Iraq and exposure to depleted uranium.
I joined the Army National Guard, and 2 days after I was enlisted into the Army National Guard, I was activated, and they asked me to volunteer to go to Iraq. I said no. So they involuntarily reassigned me, and the next thing I knew, I was standing in Iraq in 145-degree temperature with sandstorms and all kinds of things going on.
What did you see in Iraq?
It was like being homeless, but you was with so many other homeless people. I'd never lived like this in my life. It was just... There were no words to describe it, you know.
Why was it like being homeless?
You slept in abandoned places. The only thing that you had that was a step above a cardboard box was a cot. When you woke up in the morning, you coughed up this big glob of this brown stuff every morning. So that came from breathing in all these particles because the doors wouldn't close. The windows all blowing out. birds flew by and defecated on you. There were rats, droppings all over the place. And then you had to deal with the sandstorms and the camel spiders and sand fleas.
And you were used to being in another war.
Well, I was lucky when I enlisted in 1973. I didn't actually have to go to war. When the Gulf War was going on, I was in the Coast Guard. I didn't have to go. So this was my first war. When I arrived, I was assigned the duties as a warden of a civilian prison in Samoa due to my experience as a New York City Corrections Department warden.
What was that like?
I was responsible for the reconstruction of maximum security prison. I had to set up contracts to feed the prisoners, you know, hire an Iraqi to bring in breakfast, lunch, and an evening meal. I was the official food taster, where you had to taste the food to see if it was palatable for the inmates. I had a counterpart, we used to call him Major Muhammad, and he was a very nice gentleman, and all our conversations were between an interpreter. I had my own interpreter that traveled with me. But it was, you know, it was an experience until my whole left side, for reasons unknown, I guess, being jostled around in the vehicle, banging my head against the ceiling caused a herniated disc in my C-spine and lumbar spine. And I had a total paralysis of my left side, just froze up, where I was just in excruciating pain and couldn't sleep. So eventually my unit released me.
So when you came back here, you had to be, you know, you had to relieve your paralysis, which looks like that's getting better. And then you were feeling more and more ill as time went by?
Guys from my unit started coming back injured. And as we started talking, we had the same symptoms. You know, the rashes or sexual dysfunctions, the headaches, joint aches, not being able to sleep, feeling dizzy, nauseous, sensitive to the light. Then our medic came in and said that the area that we were staying in had been tested by the Japanese and the Dutch and had been found unlivable. It was contaminated with depleted uranium besides asbestos, rat droppings, bird droppings that we knew about. Well, we went to the Army, and we asked if there was a test for depleted uranium. The Army told us that they would check into it and get back to us. They later came back and told us that there was no test for depleted uranium and that they would send us to see a psychiatrist or something like that. So we started making phone calls and going on the internet, and we did find there is a test for depleted uranium. We reached out to the Daily News, Juan Gonzalez, and he came down to Fort Dix. We met him off the base, and we told him our story. And he went back to his producers, and they agreed to pay the bill for the testing. And when we got the results back, we were, you know, further amazed. And we took this to the Army and said, look, this is what we have. And all of a sudden, there was a test. And they wanted to test us. And that was after we had a press conference with Senator Schumer. We sat down with Senator Hillary Clinton here in Manhattan in her office. And she explained to us that it was mind-boggling to her because she was on the committee that set up the procedures for the next war. And the Army didn't follow them. You know, everybody was supposed to have a complete physical prior to going downrange. And when I say downrange, I mean into the war area. And once you came back, you were supposed to have another complete physical. And that's blood, urine, the whole works. Then you're supposed to compare these two to see if there's any type of deterioration over a period of time. Well, the Army never took the first step. They never gave us the first physical. It was like they didn't want to know, or they knew what it would show from Gulf War. I mean, Gulf War syndrome. And we were going to the same area. We were going to start out in Kuwait and work our way through Iraq. So that's why I'm speaking out about the depleted uranium, because I've been lied to by my own government. And they still haven't recognized that I've been exposed to depleted uranium.
To this day?
To this day.
Can you tell me how you were exposed to depleted uranium?
To the best of my knowledge, inhaling it, eating it. When you came into the compound, to your left would be picnic tables. Well, that's where we ate. And the road right next to it is where all the vehicle traffic came in and out. And as they passed by, they would just kick up this dust. And this dust would just be one big cloud, and it'd settle on you and your food. So we breathed it in, we drank it, and we ate it.
So you weren't actually dealing with tanks directly or with munitions directly?
No, we were just working in an area that was contaminated already from the bombing from the previous war and this war. I think everybody has to realize that. I think the first Gulf War, they used like 375 tons of depleted uranium rounds. In this war, they used something like 2,200 tons of depleted uranium rounds. And every time this stuff hits a vehicle or another tank and it burns, it leaves little minute particles that are like ceramic tile dust. And when you breathe it in, it stays in your body. It never goes anywhere. It's like heavy metal. And when the wind blows, it travels on the sand. And that's how we were contaminated. You know, we inhaled this stuff.
So how do you feel about the Army after all of this?
Let's put it this way. I'm very angry at the Army. I have a son that's 6 years old, and he wanted to follow in my footsteps. I will expend every penny that I have to ensure that my son stays in college until he's 45 before I'll allow him to enlist into the United States Army. And only because they have faltered. They did not hold up their part of the bargain. When I enlisted and I signed the contract and I raised my right hand, they are not treating me like a human being, and they're not treating my fellow soldiers that I work with as human beings because they failed to tell the truth about this depleted uranium. They knew about this prior to us going. And the fact that I even had to reach out to my senator, Senator Schumer and Senator Clinton, because I wasn't getting proper medical treatment is enough to blow your mind, you know? These are things that should be automatic. When I came back, that should have been the first thing on their mind. You know, like, come on, let's take care of the soldier and every other soldier that comes back hurt. And if he's able to carry on his duties, fine. If he's not, then we'll give him a discharge. I even had to fight for my medical separation. I wasn't able to go back to my prior employment as an assistant deputy warden at Rikers Island because of my injuries, the pain, and the medication that I'm on. So they finally gave me a 30% disability from the Army, and I got a 80% disability from the Veterans Administration right now.
Have you done any outreach to young people who are thinking about joining the Army?
You know, anytime I run across a young man or a young woman that's thinking about joining the service, I tell them I wouldn't do it. I tell them about what I've been exposed to and what they will be exposed to and how their government is not going to stand by them. There's only one senator who has a son that's serving right now, and the rest of them have no clue as to what's going on. And maybe that's why they're not doing a damn thing to help the soldiers that are in this plight right now.
What is your opinion about the use of depleted uranium in weapons? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us, or you can call us at 1-877-MARYKNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.